I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
There is a definite chill in the air here in Wisconsin. Fall seems to be in full swing, which means we have pumpkin spice lattes, pumpkin muffins, pumpkin just about everything.
But are we using our pumpkins to their fullest potential? We got a pumpkin expert to fill us in on how to cook with them for this Food Friday. His name is Michael Crondell. He's a food historian and author of The Great Little Pumpkin Cookbook.
Michael, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much.
Well, you've written a whole cookbook about pumpkin, so clearly this is an ingredient that you love. What is it that you like about cooking with pumpkin?
Well, doesn't everybody love pumpkins? I mean, they're cute. They're orange. You don't get them year-round. There's just something appealing about them.
What about the flavor? Is it special when you put it up against, say, a squash or something like that?
I'll tell you what it is. It's very specific. The thing about pumpkins that sort of excite me is they're really only available for a few months of the year. And, you know, we're at the point where everything is available year-round so that apples don't really mean fall anymore. They mean any old time. But pumpkins, you can't get a pumpkin in June. You can't get a pumpkin in July. So they still epitomize fall in a way that just no other growing thing almost does.
What kind of pumpkin should we be cooking with? Because I'm guessing you can't just go to your pumpkin patch and get one of the giant ones and happily cook a pumpkin pie with it.
Yeah. There's a bunch of different pumpkins that people grow, and, you know, they grow them for different purposes. So a lot of those really pretty orange pumpkins are grown to be really pretty and orange, and that's about it. They're made specifically with thin walls so that they're easy to carve and turn into jack-o'-lanterns. They're miserable in terms of flavor. It's kind of like trying to eat, you know, I don't know, flowers instead of lettuce. They're not grown for that. There are other pumpkins, though, that are specifically grown to eat rather than to cut up into jack-o'-lanterns. The most common of these is something called a cheese pumpkin. You're in Wisconsin, right? You know about things like cheese.
I know about cheese. I've never heard of a cheese pumpkin before.
Cheese pumpkin. And it looks like it looks a little bit like a Gouda cheese, which is why they call it a cheese pumpkin. It doesn't actually taste anything like a cheese, but it's sort of round and kind of tan in color on the outside. But you cut into it, and it's got thick walls, so there's a lot of pumpkin in there. And it's sort of bright orange on the inside. So from the outside, it's a little bit homely, but on the inside, it's gorgeous.
Nice. So then what do you do once you've got your beautiful cheese pumpkin and you want to do something with it? How do you prepare it and get the puree that you could get a nice, convenient can of?
Well, now, hold on a minute. Puree. There's lots of things you can do with a pumpkin other than just turn it into pumpkin pie. But, of course, you need to buy my book for that. But if you want, let's answer your question first, and then I'll go on to all the other things you can do with a pumpkin. But one of the things that you need to do if you're going to turn it into puree for, like, a pumpkin pie is you have to roast it first so it gets mushy, right? So you cut it up, scoop out the seeds, put it in the oven for about 45 minutes to an hour at about 375, 400, and you've got mush. You scoop out the mush, and then you need to let the excess water drain out. So you kind of mash it up a little bit, put it in a colander or put it in a sieve, and then let it drip for a couple of hours. And you'd be amazed how much water comes out of it. And then you've got, you know, your pumpkin puree, just like you might get out of a Libby's can, except it tastes better. And if you have extra, you can freeze it and save it. But, and here's the big but, there's all these other things you can do with a whole pumpkin.
Yeah, what else can we do with it?
One of my favorite things, and you cannot do this with a can of Libby's, is you can scoop the thing out, and you can layer it with toasted bread, sort of a crusty, sort of Italian or French-style crusty bread, cream, and some sort of a slightly stinky cheese, so like Gruyere or a Monterey Jack or something like that. And basically you layer bread, cheese, cream with relatively a lot of salt and pepper in it. Then you put the top back on. So you scoop the thing out, right? You fill it with this kind of almost savory bread pudding mixture. You put the top back on, wrap the whole thing in tin foil, and then cook it for about 2 hours at about 400 in the oven. And then you take the tin foil off, and then you mash around, you kind of like mix around all those ingredients that are inside the pumpkin, and you have the most delicious, savory kind of stuff.
Yeah. I think I'm dumbstruck conceptualizing all this cheese and cream and pumpkin
together. Oh, well, you know, cheese, cream, and pumpkin. So you've got creamy, cheesy, pumpkin-y, salt, pepper. It's just,
yeah, that can't be bad.
It's just autumn.
Is that a worthy Thanksgiving side dish, would you say?
Oh, sure. Or just do it instead of Thanksgiving.
Is it a dippy thing, or do you just kind of sip it out?
No, it's more like, it would be more like a side dish or possibly a first course. It's more like a bread pudding consistency.
Oh, that sounds yummy. So that's a savory way to go with pumpkin.
Oh, yeah.
Is that your favorite way, or do you like the sweet?
You know what? It depends what you want to do with it. It's in Europe, they use it a lot in a savory preparation. So there's lots of pumpkin soups, and the French do an au gratin with it. So they basically slice it thin and then kind of do it like potatoes. You know, they put butter and again cheese. And bake it so that it's kind of like potatoes au gratin.
So about the pumpkins themselves, now here's a question for you. Are they fruits or are they vegetables?
Well, that's one of those questions. Are you asking a cook or a botanist? A cook will tell you it's a vegetable. A botanist will tell you it's a fruit.
Huh.
You know, you use it like a vegetable, but botanically it's got seeds in it, so it's a fruit, like a zucchini is a fruit, if you want to call it that. Like a tomato is a fruit, or eggplant is a fruit. But nobody calls those things fruits.
Hmm. I suppose it doesn't matter when you're in your kitchen. It is what it is. It's tasty.
And you know, and it is remarkable in that, and it, you know, all winter squashes like this, is that you can go either the sweet way or the savory way. You can turn it into dessert, any one of a number of desserts, or you can turn it into these savory preparations, and it's delicious both ways, which is kind of unusual.
So when pumpkin is out of season and, you know, we're not using it as easily, we can't find those sugar pumpkins, if we're looking at a recipe, you know, could we substitute squash and get, you know, more or less the same effect?
Well, you have to realize that a pumpkin is a squash. You know, it's kind of one of those, like, a dachshund is a dog, but a dog isn't a dachshund.
Oh, gotcha.
So a pumpkin is a kind of squash, and there are close relatives. For example, butternut squash was actually developed out of a kind of a pumpkin. So, you know, butternut squash great-grandfather was a pumpkin.
Okay, well, that's a good way to think about it. Is it any more labor-intensive than cooking with, say, a butternut squash?
It depends what you're going to do with it. If you're making soup, butternut squash is probably less work. But if, like, you know, you are using it as a vessel for something, then, of course, you can't use a butternut squash because it doesn't have the nice big hole in it.
Right. Well, you were selling me on these recipes. Do you have another one for us, something that's a little unexpected like that?
I'm just, you know what? When I was doing research on this, I came across these old English recipes because the English took to pumpkins very, very early on. And they would make an apple pie that was a half apple and half pumpkin pie. So they would take the pumpkin, they would peel it and cut it up into pieces, and they would mix it with sliced apples. And then they would bake it like you would a traditional two-crusted apple pie, but it was half pumpkin and half apple. So the pumpkin in there isn't pureed. It's there, you know, in slices.
That sounds yummy. Have you tried that?
Oh, yeah. I think they have a recipe in my book for that.
Excellent. Well, so pumpkin pie, you know, this is the gold standard, I guess, for people at Thanksgiving. They want to have a good pumpkin pie. A lot of people I know just, you know, get the can of Libby's, follow the directions, and that is their pumpkin pie. Now, what would you suggest if we wanted to get, you know, really organic with it and use a real pumpkin? How can we make our pumpkin pie better and step it up with fresh pumpkin?
Well, first of all, there's nothing wrong with Libby's. You know, there are certain canned products which, as long as you just get the pumpkin as opposed to pumpkin pie filling, which is miserable stuff. But if you just get the pumpkin, there's really nothing terrible about it. But if you want to go, you know, one step higher than that, you do go, you know, you go to your local farmer's market and get yourself a cheese pumpkin. You cut it in half and you roast the thing out. Roast the thing up. And then scoop it out, make your puree, and then, like I said, you need to let it drain because it's just too watery initially. So you need to let it drain for 2 or 3 hours, and then you've got your pumpkin puree, and you can use that. And it will have a fresher, cleaner flavor compared to a canned product.
And do you do the basic spices that we're used to seeing, your cinnamon, your nutmeg, your allspice, or is there a different spice blend that you found that makes it better?
I like that spice blend just because it's very medieval. When you look at really, really old recipes, all those sweet spices together, the nutmeg, cinnamon, cloves, and ginger, I like to put some ginger in there too, they're kind of what they were serving, you know, on just about every food 300 or 400 years ago. And so for me, it has this kind of, I don't know, tradition behind it that isn't just a tradition of a couple of hundred years, but like goes way back to the Middle Ages.
Wow. Yeah, that is a cool way to think about it. Well, what about the pumpkin seeds? I love pumpkin seeds. It's one of my favorite things about carving a pumpkin. And they're supposed to be nutritional, good for you and healthy. Are you a fan of pumpkin seeds?
I have to confess to being really lazy and just buying shelled pumpkins, which I like. I'll tell you what part of the problem with using that, you know, carving out that pumpkin, using those pumpkin seeds. In the same way that pumpkins are grown specifically to be jack-o'-lantern pumpkins, other pumpkins are grown specifically for their seeds. And those pumpkins have much larger and kind of fleshier seeds. And when you, like, go to a Mexican market and buy pepitas, which are those green, you know, pumpkin seeds,
mm-hmm.
Which I love, they're from a different kind of a pumpkin. That's why they're three times the size of the ones that you dig out of the one that you've carved from the jack-o'-lantern. That said, I think the whole process of carving the jack-o'-lantern and then roasting the seeds, there's something lovely about that as well. But then it's more kind of like it's about the process.
So speaking of seasonal, have you also had your first pumpkin spice latte of the season to celebrate?
I am afraid that I'm one of those people that thinks coffee should just taste like coffee. And
you're a purist.
It's not so much that I'm a purist. I don't really like cinnamon or hazelnut. I don't like any of those flavors in my coffee. So I want my pumpkin spice in my pumpkin pie.
All right. Well, we've got lots of fresh inspiration here for pumpkin. Michael, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
That was Michael Crandall, food historian, author of The Great Little Pumpkin Cookbook and Sweet Invention, A History of Dessert.